Hello and welcome to this edition of Majlis. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Director of Turkmen Service of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Since members of Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan driven out of Pakistan in a military offensive in Fatah, most of them went to northern Afghanistan. But recent reports of clash between some fraction of the Taliban and IMU members in Zabul also indicates their presence in the south. The same report also suggests that in the fighting, IMU members were badly crashed. In this episode of Majlis, we will be looking into details of IMU casualties in the fighting and what will it mean to their military capacity in the future. To discuss the subject, I have Mohammed Emin Mudaqiq, director of Radio Mashal, which broadcasts to Fatah region of Pakistan. He also closely follows security situation in northern Afghanistan. Sirojiddin Talibov, Arif Yarilov's Uzbek service broadcaster, is joining us, who has been reporting about IMU and other Central Asian militants for over a decade now. As always, Bruce Panier is also among us, who is the editor of Kishlak Awazi, a blog which monitors Central Asia for Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Thank you for joining me, gentlemen, in this edition of Majlis.
Thank you.
I mean, first, let's do some reality check in Zabul. What did really happen over the last few days?
Well, when the Taliban started its offensive against dissident Mansur Dadullah, inevitably they have to attack IMU people or Jindullah people as well.
Why would
Because they were stationed in the same area. Their bases were in the same area. First, the Jindullah came there around 2008-2009 when Mullah Nazir and Hafiz Gul Bahadur signed an alliance with the government, an agreement with the government, and they started pushing them out. Then, after the mediation of Mullah Biradar, the deputy leader of Taliban, they were sent to Daesh Yopan and Zabul. But they were there keeping very low profile. But after this Mansur Dadullah, in early 2015, was expelled from Pakistan. Yeah. And he joined these people. And then the Taliban were forced to attack him because a new faction of Taliban, a breakaway faction, emerged. So the Taliban, fearing that they will get strong, because the new faction is in Herat and they were in Zabul. So fearing that these two factions will join hand and capture more area, so the Taliban, led by Mansur, start attacking this new faction of the Taliban, breakaway faction. IMU was in front of them and they were in giant trenches with them. So they have suffered. They have to fight, because they were attacked from three sides. Right. Even Hazara militia also, led by Bashi Habib, also participated in the fight. So they were crushed in very easily in 3-4 days. And according to the hostages who were released, they say that at the last day, only two Uzbek fighters remained in the scenes.
Let's bring Sirojit in here. So your information, it's coming obviously from the Afghan side. Mm-hmm. What you have been getting, Sirojit, in by your discussions with the sources that you have in the IMU about the inside of that fighting?
So we have been in constant contact with the spokesman of IMU.
Right.
I think his name was Nasrullah. But the last, after 31st of October, he disappeared from the social media. And we were wondering why it's happening. And after several days, we saw reports from Afghanistan saying that there were clashes, and the main headquarters of IMU, which joined to Islamic State, was wiped out in Zabul province. And then we assumed that somehow he may be there and these stories may be true. After several days, we received live recorded in walkie-talkie his last speech, probably. We assume that he died already. And he said, a spokesman of IMU says that we are surrounded by the Taliban pedophiles. They may kill all of us. They have requested us to surrender and canceled our allegiance to Islamic State. Otherwise, all of us would be killed. But we swore that we'll follow Islamic State and Khalifa al-Baghdadi, so we'll stay till the end. and all together we are surrounded and we are very close at only 1 kilometer is under our control, he said. And he was crying, and he also said to pray for them. He said that altogether 20 men and 20 women left. Others just wiped out from earth. So this is what he said.
So this is the report from last week, previous week?
Yes. Yes, the incident happened probably, this was recorded in the beginning of November, and we received it in last week. Mm-hmm. So we can assume it is between 31st of October and 15th of November.
The actual fighting, you mean, right?
Yes.
What number are we talking about here when we say that they are crashed or they are wiped out and everything? Specifically, in this clash, in the area where this fighting took place, which is obviously Zabul, right?
The prisoners say that the number of Uzbeks were about 200 people.
In Zabul.
So he estimated about around 50 or close to 100. I mean, half of them were killed. And some of them fled. In an email I received from a pro-Taliban writer who just today said that there are so many captured alive and they are now living with their family in Zabul under the strict observation of the Taliban. But they don't know about the fate of Osman Ghazi. Yeah. He is neither killed or not captured. They cannot confirm that he is killed or captured.
What's Srojit in your source?
So we got reports allegedly that he was first arrested and then executed under Sharia law for betrayal. But we cannot confirm. These reports were also spread out in the Russian media of Central Asia, Russian-speaking media of Central Asia and Russia as well.
Yeah. This person is very, very close to Nazar Mahmad Mutmaini, probably. He said that he cannot confirm that he is either killed or arrested. So he said that he might be hiding somewhere.
It sounds like the really bloody fighting took place in that place. So yes. the ones who were advancing against these militants, right, were they also so tough against local Taliban who might have been fighting with IMU together against the other fraction of the Taliban? Or they were intending to crash IMU militants there?
I think the main target was the breakaway faction. They come on the way, you know. The main, because those who start attacking were two kind of people, two group of. One was Hazara, who wanted to revenge from this breakaway faction, which of course in that case include IMU, Uzbeks also. The other faction was led by Akhtar Mawad Mansour, who wanted to eliminate that breakaway faction, in a sense. Yes, yeah, Hazaras, who was advancing on one out of three columns, they intended to attack the Uzbeks because originally 31 Hazara were captured by the Uzbeks.
Yes, and some of them were executed, remember. After
four of them were executed. Mm.
Why those IMU militants were there in Zabul in first place?
As I told you, they were in 2008... they were expelled from Pakistan.
Yes, that's true. In
a number, about 100 of them were killed. Yeah. Then Mullah Brother intervened. They were first evacuated to Hakimullah Masood, to South Waziristan.
Right.
And then from South Waziristan, they were brought to Zabul under the supervision of Mullah Brother, mediation and supervision of Mullah Brother. So they were spread in Daichupan and in Khaki Afwan just to be there because they had families, they have children, and they were all crushed, you know, when the Taliban regime collapsed.
We understand that. I mean, for that they were together with the Taliban in Zabul, but they also know that this is not a friendly spot for them, isn't it? I mean, since especially when they announced their allegiance against
this is their dilemma.
There is also not a kind of ethnic or linguistic connection to local people in that suburb.
This was a very isolated place in the mountains of Daichupan, which was selected for them. They were living away from the main Pashtun society, so they were on their own. They had mountain and bases, as far as I know. Then up to 2014, they were fine. But once Mullah Omar disappeared, and the Taliban also established the Qatar office. Yeah. And they issued a statement that they don't want Afghan soils to be used against any other countries. So they give us kind of signals that they don't want Uzbek anymore. So Uzbeks were looking for an opportunity. When once the Daesh appeared in 2014, they quickly announced allegiances. They thought that Taliban leader has been killed, and the Taliban will be crashed, you know, wiped up from Afghanistan. So it is time to have a new leadership, a new kind of new.
There is another reason for that as well. Yeah. Islamic movement of Uzbekistan was divided into two big factions. One still remained with Al Qaeda linked group in Syria, the Jabhat al Nusra, and they now as they set up their own Katiba, its battalion. Which is called Katiba al-Bukhari. Mostly the main commanders were from the split faction of Islamic movement of Uzbekistan, who left from Waziristan a few years ago. And the rest who remained in Afghanistan, the way a rivalry between those who left and those who remained in Afghanistan, in Pakistan. So the one faction joined Al-Nusra, Al-Qaeda linked Al-Nusra front in Syria. The rest decided to join to Islamic State.
There is also split between them even in Afghan territory, right?
So it happened during the after the American invasion. They were forced to go to seek asylum, safe haven in Waziristan. The division between the groups, between various regional groups in IMU, took place till 2010. After the death of Tahrir Yoldash, the first leader of IMU, there were those who wanted to spread their jihadi ideas throughout the world, and there were those who wanted to focus only on Uzbekistan. They said, "It is not our war. We are not. We don't want to fight against government of Pakistan, but we have to focus on Uzbekistan regime of Karimov." So those who left joined Syria, Al-Nusra Front, and those who left focused on the attacks in Pakistan.
Yeah, Bruce, you've been quite silent.
I just had a question then. we know that there's a lot of these IMU guys across the north, too, and we know that they entered after the Pakistani military started their military operation, their offensive in the spring of 2014.
Yeah.
It's never been entirely clear to me the people that of the IMU members that went into the north, who was still under Usman Ghazi's control, and who, because I mean, obviously they were fleeing the attack, so it wasn't an organized retreat or anything. And there seems to be a lot of these people in the north who aren't under Usman Ghazi's control, but they still claim to be part of the IMU at the same time, and they're not. They don't seem to be very connected to the Al Qaeda linked group in Syria either. So who are?
I think first I disagree with that notion which Pakistani government in the international media created, that only after the July 2014 offensive the IMU crossed into Afghanistan. No, IMU were there, as I said before,
right.
Long before they were there. They only decided to go to the north, according to well-researched article by Wahid Mujda, when they started allegiances to al-Baghdadi, and the local Taliban said, okay, if you have done this, then get out of the area. Then they sought 20 days, you know, kind of delay, 20 days time to decide. And at that moment, they started to move their fighting forces, the main fighting forces, to Badakhshan. According to one sources, the number of IMU, or the number of Jundullah who moved to Badakhshan were 5,000 people, including children, women, and Chechens, Tajiks, all. And the IMU in Badakhshan is still headed by a Tajik. The Jundullah is by Tajik. Another group who are pure Uzbek, they had already connection with Uzbeks in Maimana. They moved toward Lawlash in Bandar, you know, where the helicopter crashed. So they are stationed there. In October, when I was in Balkh, many people told me that they have seen Uzbeks from Uzbekistan training the local fighters.
Yeah.
So they are there. This offensive was just a kind of political.
It was also confirmed during our conversation, an off-the-record conversation writings between the spokesman of IMU and our side, our journalists. He confirmed that there are two main factions of IMU, one in northeast of Afghanistan. It is Badakhshan province, Tahar and Kunduz, those areas. Another faction, which was in Zabul, and mostly in Faryab province. Yeah. So they also confirmed that those are also Islamic movement of Uzbekistan. But here, all of us are Uzbeks. There are other nationalities as well.
Even Arabs are there.
So what was the basis of their division, ideological, political?
You see, it's for Uzbeks to live among the Uzbeks much easier to be safe. Culturally, linguistically, physically, it's easier to outside to cooperate with the local people. In Badakhshan of Afghanistan, also for Tajiks, it's close to the border of Tajikistan as well.
Sure, but I'm saying there's split between IMU groups.
Which was not an obvious split. They just decided, you know, to go where they are safe, I think. Yeah. But the main division or rivalry between two sections which are separated, it is Al Qaeda linked group, which is now in Syria, and another group is in Afghanistan. So they are divided.
Amin, you were going to say something about that.
I think from what I heard and what I researched, that the first division between IMU came the biggest, or very much visible division. Of course, as my friend said, that they were division before, but after 2014, when they decided to regionalize IMU, to get more people accommodated, and then it was demand of that people to change the name. Why should a Tajik or Arab or Chechens or Kyrgyz fight under the banner of Uzbekistan? So top political leadership agreed to that. But there was Uzbek nationalists, you know, who with very strong nationalist scenes, wanted to focus on Uzbekistan only.
This to change the name, talks about the changing name were even subject of consideration during the times of Tahir Yuldash as well. And we have video record of Tahir Yuldash where he says that, you know, that there were suggestions to change the name, but it is already branded name. Everybody knows. This is why we decided, you know, to keep this name. But in fact, there were a lot of Tajiks, Kyrgyz, Uyghurs, and even Chechens as well, Arabs among those, and even Bangladeshi, the mullah was also among them.
Interestingly, it was irrelevant even in by the time when the IMU was founded, most probably in Tajikistan, when they were chased, when Adalat party of Jumabai Namangani and Yuldash was chased out of Uzbekistan, and in that time Abdullah Nuri was ruling Tajikistan. So they moved to Tahvildara. Jumabai Namangani established a base in Tahvildara, in Tajikistan. And then when in 1999, Tajik government signed an agreement with the Islamic Renaissance Party of Abdullah Nuri, then Abdullah Nuri requested him to leave.
You know? It was very difficult for Abdullah Nuri to request Uzbeks, ethnic Uzbeks from Uzbekistan to leave their bases, those who fought along with them against Tajik government forces for so many years. But there were huge pressure from the Uzbek side, Uzbek government, Karimov's regime, plus Rahmon also joined these pressures as well. So Nuri was forced to ask them. And then with the help of Sayyid Abdullah Nuri, they were safely transferred from eastern Tajikistan, Pamir foothills, to Afghanistan.
And they were transported in Russian helicopter from Tahvildara into the Mawarai Kokchai in Darqat. And these poor people were misused by the Taliban to fight alongside with them to capture Talokan. Forces of 2,000 of them, so many were killed to fight Massoud. And they were the people who captured Talokan because they were tough fighters. They had no place to go, so they have to prove themselves. Yeah. And we were getting frequent reports that those who were, you know, transported safely by helicopters.
If you look at the history of Islamic movement of Uzbekistan, one ironic thing, you know, say is so visible to us. They have always been trying to convince others that they are good fighters. In Tajikistan, Juman Amangani was Mujahid of the Year 1995. He was so-called son of Sayyid Abdullah Nuri. And then when they left to Afghanistan, they have to show to Taliban that they're the good tough fighters, and they had very strong fighters, and they struggled and stayed till the end during the when American forces and Northern Alliance forces surrounded the Kunduz area as well, and then they were forced to go to Pakistan, even there they had to show that they're tough fighters.
Yeah.
And now today,
the capture of Talokan was a gift from the IMU to Taliban. Before, even Masood was surprised how the Taliban are resisting in this area. That much tough. You know, where are these forces coming from? Right.
No, obviously, these are very, very interesting background information. But if we talk about our today's subject, that is what happened to IMU, and we spoke about the division between them and the heavy setback in Zabul. Even we are questioning whether their leadership is alive or dead today. So let's take a short break here. When we come back, we will discuss what all this means to the future of IMU in Afghanistan or in the region. Welcome back to the Majlis. Today we are discussing heavy casualties of IMU in the recent fighting in southern Zabul province of Afghanistan and what does it mean for the future military capacity of the group. Joining me in the studio is Amin Mudakik, director of Radio Mashal, which broadcasts to tribal region of Pakistan. Also joining us is Sirajuddin Talibov, who is the broadcaster in our Uzbek service. As always, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberties Central Asia blog called Kishlak Awazi, is also among us. I am Mohammed Tahir, director of the Turkmen service of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. So, Sirajuddin, will the recent casualties of IMU, the division that we spoke about, and the unknown situation about the fate of their leaders, what are all these going to mean their future military or the operational capacity in Afghanistan?
We're talking about one small group of Islamic movement of Uzbekistan, which was surrounded and then annihilated by the Taliban in Zabul province.
Right.
But in the Turkic-speaking areas of Afghanistan, Maimana, and those areas close to Turkmen border, the areas of Faryab province, as far as I know, in those remote areas, they are still active. And several thousand of them are still there with their families. But we don't have the confirmed reports. And they are still active in Badakhshan. So they may change the name, but people are still there.
You know, we also went into the background a little bit about their survival in many other similar situations, like early days of the Taliban and their decade-long history in tribal region of Pakistan. They are known as a group who can survive in any difficult situation. This also gives me a reason to question what is the source of human or financial source of these organizations which enables it to continue despite all ups and downs. Where they get all these human or financial sources? Strategy?
They have, as far as I know, they have Baitul Mal, the fund, a centralized fund, and it is divided equally among the members. First, if difficulty comes, a ration decreases. If their income increases, so the portion of ration also increases. The quite simple story. The financially, it was centralized and it was tightly controlled.
But where money comes to their Baitul Mal, for instance?
There are different stories. There were, you know, hired assassins among the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan, those who fought and killed, you know, selected people under the order and for quite a big amount of money in Pakistan. And drug story still goes, as far as we know, it's, they control some areas in Badakhshan, and drugs go to Central Asia, and from Central Asia to Russia, Kazakhstan, Russia, and to Europe. So they have quite a lion margin from that income. And, of course, the weapon control as well. And, of course, the in the areas where they control, they demand money as well, for safety as well. This is what we know.
Bruce, you've been following this group for a long, long time. What is your information based on your own field research or experience, how they attract this money from whatever sources they get it?
Well, I mean, the first summer that the IMU showed up in Batken, the people in southern Kyrgyzstan knew who Juman Almangani was as the major drug dealer between northern Afghanistan and southern Kyrgyzstan. You know, it was a new thing for him to be the head of a militant group. They knew that he'd fought in the civil war. Right. But they immediately identified him as being the big drug baron of that region. So the illegal narcotics sales have been part of the IMU since the very start. You know, Sarojuddin or Amin would probably know more about how they financed themselves once they got to Pakistan. And once they got chased into Pakistan, that's where it starts to get a little vague for me as to how exactly they got money. Clearly, they were away from the Tajik-Afghan border, and it wouldn't have been so, although they would have still known people, I doubt that they could have actively trafficked narcotics, certainly not on the scale that they had been prior to November 2001. So it is something of a mystery to me. We know that the IMU, at least according to Pakistani media, was used for a lot of these major operations that Tariq-i-Taliban engaged in, yeah. the Karachi airport, yeah. Things like that. So we know that, you know, the stories of them being hired hitmen seem to fit in with that kind of image that they were making a lot of their money by doing jobs, so to speak, for the Haqqani network or Tariq-i-Taliban or somebody like that in Pakistan. Now that they're closer to the Central Asian border, in greater numbers anyway than they used to be on the Central Asian border, I imagine they've gone back to the drug dealing thing for a lot of their finances. The connections were always there. It was just a question of them having the presence along the border. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine that's been restored.
Yeah, I mean, since you are head of our Pakistan service, and the name of Pakistan pop up in several of comments made by Bruce and Suraj. So first, your information about source of their income in Pakistan. The second is, I have a specific question to you about their human resources, because we were talking before this debate that there is a direct route between militants in Afghanistan with some of the Central Asian countries. And what do we know about that route?
Yeah, and the finance resources, as Bruce mentioned, the biggest source is always drug dealing. For years, they have been involved, you know, along with the Russian weapons or drug mafia to channel this tons of drug from southern Afghanistan, where they were based, from Helmand, from Zabul, you know, to Tajikistan, you know, through Kunduz and Tahar, and then on the return, they were getting weapons, you know. And they were not getting cash money, they were getting weapons, you know. But in a part of the drug, you know, they were sending to, you know, Uzbekistan and to Tajikistan and to Russia for money, you know. As Bruce mentioned, they had very strong connection in Tajikistan, both Jumabai and Tahir al-Dash, because they were there in this politics of the era since 90. You know, the first in 1991, the first established Adalat Party. These gentlemen, so they were very well known to the people. So that gave them the power to also to establish this small cells which collect money from the religious people from Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan, and then channel this money to them. They were calling their Zabul base as a logistic base. This means that they were getting the financial resources from this base, from Pakistan side, you know, and then channeling it to Uzbekistan and Tajikistan and up to Russia. This was a kind of a transit routes, you know, they were manning a transit routes. These were the main source, plus they had some cells in Middle East, in Uzbekistan, in Tajikistan to collect money and give it to them. So, but yes, the resources are
the human resources.
As the police commander of Tahar said a month ago, the influence the Turkmen and Uzbek religious leadership, the Turkmen and Uzbek
local
mullah through their preaching, they get the support of the local youth.
Yeah.
And also regularly, people from Tajikistan and Uzbekistan through Tajikistan are joining them. A couple of people confirmed to me that they have seen groups of IMU crossing the Oxus River in Kazal, Kalaizal in Kaldar, and then crossing to the Shubrahan and Mazar Highway or Kabul Shubrahan Highway, and then taking the public transport and also private transport, which had the photo of Commander Massoud on the top, and then come to Aqcha, come to Jawzjan, and he has seen that there were other group of IMU waiting for them to take them, to transfer them further toward Faryab. So they said that they are seeing this regularly, that people are coming and dropping the passengers, mainly Uzbeks, and then there are other groups with clean shaved, you know, waiting for them with pickups. With the support of local Taliban, they are transported further to Faryab and Saripol in the Belcherakh Pashtunkot area. And this Mazar or Shibrghan Highway is regularly used by them. And there is no check of identity card over there. When you travel there hundreds of times, nobody will tell you, give me your passport or your... As far as you know the language, it's okay.
And you can easily get Afghan passport as well.
Nobody check.
So we got, there's Uzbeks and Tajiks from Central Asia who are crossing into Afghanistan.
Through Tajikistan.
And the Taliban are facilitating their movement once they get into northern Afghanistan.
In northern Afghanistan, particularly in that part of Turkmen border, in Faryab, Saripol, and Jawzjan, the IMU are the teachers, so they are well respected. So almost in every district, there are three or four IMU people who were publicly seen that in Jawzjan, in Saripol, in Faryab, that they are training the local Taliban, the local Uzbek Taliban, except for Mazar.
In what?
In military.
Military training.
They give military training. So they call them teachers. They call them
instructors.
Instructors. So they are well respected. When the new group arrives, usually in cars, in the small buses, which has the photo of Massoud on the front seat. So the instructors, along with local Talibans, are waiting for them in Aqcha, in Faizabad, in the limit of Jawzjan province. As soon as they enter the limit of Jawzjan province, they are picked up by them, of course, supported by local Taliban, and then they are moved further, transported further to Saripol, to this Charsai, and then from Charsai they go to Faryab.
So once they're there and they've undergone their training, who do they fight alongside? Which group do they join at that point?
As far as I heard, in Faryab, they are not fighting. In Faryab, Saripol, and Jawzjan, they are not fighting. They are only instructor, because their numbers are limited. Mm-hmm. So the protocol between them is, because these local villagers who are seeing Talibans day and night, so they talk to them, they give them lunch, breakfast. So they were talking to me that they said that we don't want Uzbek to fight. We only want them to teach us. So they were the teachers of many kind of weapons. Tanks, they have captured tanks, they are teaching. So they are, particularly artillery, mortars. Yeah. So they are, and my villager told me as soon as you cross the border with to Jawzjan in Faizabad area, you clearly see in Memlek village that the IMU are training the local Taliban. All the villagers confirmed that these are Uzbekistanis who teach the local Taliban.
Yeah, right. And I think my question, probably very similar to Bruce, what you are trying to ask is, when they come to Afghanistan, I understand that local militants are facilitating their transport and everything. But once they arrive to their destination, what group they join?
They join the IMU.
IMU.
They join the IMU. They don't mix with the Taliban, both in Kunduz and in Faryab front. They no more are mixing, even in Kunduz, very reliable sources told me that particularly after they announced their allegiances to Al-Qaeda, they are now stationed in different position. So they are fighting, even if they are fighting, their side is different. So they do not mix with the local Taliban in Kunduz and Faryab. In Faryab, they even do not fight, sources told me. They just instruct.
But as far as we know, in Takhar province, in the northeast of Afghanistan, in Takhar, Kunduz areas, and Badakhshan, the IMU have been holding joint operations against government forces. Yeah. So.
Yeah, yeah. They said that you fight from this side. I will fight in Takhar.
I have not seen any report from the Central Asian states either denying, either confirming, even indicating, even mentioning that. How come that they don't know about this?
That was going to be my next question. We hear so much in the news about Central Asians, and of course we know they're mostly migrant laborers that go to Syria and Iraq to join the Islamic State. But we don't hear anything about these people who are actually crossing the border from Central Asia into Afghanistan and joining up with IMU units or and making their way all the way across from Badakhshan all the way to Faryab, you're suggesting. So, I mean, it's wide dispersal.
Islamic movement of Uzbekistan was very bad image for the statehood of Uzbekistan. Wherever they go, they used to hear Islamic movement of Uzbekistan, And they tried to change the name. They used to say it is not Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan, it's multinational, it is called Islamic State of Turkestan. They tried to change it. The government has been trying to change in order to get rid of the stigma. But it didn't work. And after a while, they just stopped mentioning the name at all, as if they have forgotten. And the new generation in Uzbekistan, especially young people, they don't know already. In the beginning of 2000, for example, when we used to broadcast articles about IMU, it was so big interest, but not anymore. People are not that interested on Islamic State of Uzbekistan. They're interested in Katibat al-Bukhari or Jabhat al-Nusra or Islamic State in Syria, rather than a small forgotten group of Islamic movement of Uzbekistan in Afghanistan or Pakistan. It's so far away from them. And we should also remember, keep in our mind, that time plays its role. So since they left Uzbekistan, it is more than 20 years passed since then. And the new generation, their children now among the fighters of IMU, who have no connection with Uzbekistan at all, or Central Asia, and they don't speak local languages, so they're mixed up, or their parents maybe with the it's mixed up with local people. The boy's father is ethnic Uzbek from Uzbekistan, mother is Tajik from Badakhshan of Afghanistan, or father is Pashtun from
tribal
region, and mother from Namangan province of Uzbekistan, and they don't know who they are.
It is
so complicated now.
Right. Although they might be becoming irrelevant to their original field, that is Uzbekistan or Central Asia, but it looks like despite their divisions, despite the recent setback, despite suffering huge losses in recent clashes between the Taliban and them, it looks like they are still an actor. They are still active, although in different regions. We will see how it goes from there. But at the same time, our time is coming up. Thank you very much, Sirojiddin Talib, Uzbek Service broadcaster. Amin Mudaqiq, director of Radio Mashal. Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlag Awazi of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Thank you very much for your insightful comments. And dear listeners, you have been listening to Majlis. This is it from me, Mohamed Tahir, director of Turkmen Service of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.